This is
2FM's Game On.
Now, it is less than 42 hours to the start of the Ryder Cup in Bethpage, New York. And let's cross over there now and join our own Greg Allen.
And welcome to Bethpage Park, State National Park, of course, the venue for the Ryder Cup here in New York. I'm joined, as usual, by Doug Ferguson, golf writer for Associated Press. Doug, every Ryder Cup brings with it its own USPs, you know, unique selling point. What's the unique selling point of this Ryder Cup in terms of the stories that are evolving and the teams that are playing each other, and this thing about home advantage being such a big factor in Ryder Cup, and it being maybe the biggest factor of all in a New York environment?
Yeah, I was nervous about Bethpage when they announced it in 2013 because it is the rowdiest place in golf in America, and that's for things like the Barclays and the in the PGA Championship. Now we're getting flags involved, we're getting two teams, we're getting sides involved, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, this is a loud and very passionate group. I always thought when they announced it that it was going to make Brookline look like a tea party, but the crowd's going to have a huge influence. Teams are very, I think, evenly matched. I always give the edge to Europe because they understand this competition better than the Americans do. But they are at home, and that's always an advantage. But it's just a matter of, does it get out of hand, and is it kept with good civility?
Are Ryder Cups in America, as Europe would perceive them, are they more sort of home advantage orientated because of the way that the crowd gets involved on the American side of the home advantage, perhaps in a manner of which European crowds wouldn't get involved? In other words, it's more intimidating in America.
I think it can be. I think intimidating can be a really good point. I always get a little bit offended when I heard that the American crowds are the worst and Europe's good, because when we'd go over to the Belfry or Celtic Manor or you name it, see how I'm leaving Ireland out of this, right? you hear stuff too. It's equal sides. But there is something different about the American fans. And I think one of the problems that the PGA of America has created is the number of ticket sales. I mean, it's hard enough to see with so many people here, but I think people, and that includes players, we tend to latch on to negativity. And so, like, Hazeltine to me was always the great example that there were only a few voices. There was a minority who was saying some really ugly things to Rory and to other people. But it was because ticket sales went from, say, 35,000 to 50,000. So the percentage is the same, but the actual number is greater, and there was more negativity, more ugliness that you're hearing that makes it look like the whole crowd is against you. I don't know if that makes sense, but the more people you bring, the higher the odds of stupid people saying stupid things, and you hear those.
Just in general, reflecting back on this recent history of matches being so one-sided, does the Ryder Cup need a 14.5, 13.5 this Sunday, or is it so big now that it just exists without needing to be close? Because historically, through the 80s and 90s, there were so many close matches.
I think we only talk about how close it is, and lately it isn't. On Sunday, everything feels tense and tight, and then you get to Sunday and it's 17-11, and you're thinking, no drama there. There was a little bit of drama on Sunday in Marco Simone, not very long, certainly not like Medina. But yeah, I think it doesn't need it. I mean, it'd be nice to see. I think we'd all like to see, and we'd all like to pull our hair out and pinch our skin, trying to wonder what's going to happen. But at the end of the day, it's fine. It is a very peculiar streak, I guess, that you could say that we're on. It's Wednesday right now, and we all think this is going to be a tight one, and it could be 16-12 for all we know at the end of the week, either side.
And I remember in Marco Simone, because Europe won the first day 6.5-1.5, I think, and it was kind of set in agenda that Europe were going to go on and win. But it came right down to the singles on Sunday, and there were four singles on the course. Now, there was only one hole in all four of those singles matches at one point near the end of the back nine. If all of those matches, I know it's a big ask, were turned around to America, it would have been down to the wire. In many ways, Marcus Simone was probably not as much of a blowout as Medina should have been for the Americans, and then we saw the capacity for what happens when the flick of the switch and the emotional flick of the switch turns things around. Medina is now in the rearview mirror by 13 years. I think the Ryder Cup needs it, to be honest. Not so much for it to be the monster that it is, but to be an event that people really want to watch the next time when it comes to Ireland in Adair.
There's fairness to that. I think I still think it doesn't matter because it's still the one of the greatest things going in golf and everyone looks forward to it. But to your point of looking forward to the next one, I mean, right now, kind of to Rory's point, we're looking at, you know, Americans win at home, Europe wins on the road, and this is kind of the way it goes and what should happen, etc. You get a tight one. You get a Wales, you know, you get a Medina, then you just, you know, 2 years can't get here fast enough.
Yeah, and I think actually you mentioned Wales in 2010. It could so easily have gone America's way in 2010. Let's face it, and you could have had an extraordinary away result both in 2010 and in 2012.
To be honest, Greg, from an American point of view, I always look back at why Europe hasn't won. Well, Nick Faldo probably wasn't the greatest captain, and that probably wasn't the greatest team, and that probably enabled the Americans to win in 2008. 2016, let's be honest, that was a really weak European team with rookies, with Chris Wood, with Andy Sullivan, with Danny Willett's brother. I mean, there was not a lot going on. That was a weakish European team. Whistling Straits, that was a very strong U.S. team, and never have I ever seen all the Americans on song in 1 week like that. But you also had zero support for Europe outside the rope. So I'm not so sure Europe has lost any of these matches since 1999, which is another kettle of fish I'd rather not revisit, but anyway.
And yet, matches like 1999 in Brookline, which obviously had a very raucous crowd participation, 1991, which America won in Kiawah Island, also had a very raucous crowd participation, they kind of defined the Ryder Cup. I mean, it's almost like the tribal element of the Ryder Cup is what separates it from being, you know, an individual contest for the Masters or the US Open or the PGA or the Open Championship. Maybe, you know, it's not a bad thing that you do have this very raucous tribal element, but you know, I'm not so sure it's necessary that it has to be over the edge as it might be here. We're delving into history here. Let's bring it right up to date. Scottie Scheffler had a poor Ryder Cup in Marco Simeone. No other way of putting it. Lost one of his matches by 9-8. That's 9 up with 8 to play. Got 1 point out of 4. He comes here as the runaway and very clear world number one, which he was also in Rome, but not to the level that he is right now. If Scottie Scheffler plays the way he can play, that's the difference in many ways between Marco Simeone and 2 years ago in Rome and here. Is Scottie Scheffler the key to this team, or is it much deeper than that?
He's a big key to the team, because what you always want is at least 3, if not 4 points from your top player. That's what Tiger Woods never delivered, to be fair. Dustin Johnson surely didn't in France when he was the world number one. And Scottie, as you pointed out, didn't in Rome last year. So if Scottie plays the way he does, even in team matches, and Russell Henley's been a good fit for him, then he would likely deliver points, because he has such great control of his golf ball, of his distance control, that he's rarely out of a hole, and you would expect him to win these points. You know, Bryson's another big factor for the U.S. in terms of what kind of energies he brings. There's always a few question marks, etc. But yeah. Absolutely, it starts with Scottie. And I find what most interesting about Scottie and Rome is, even though he won the Masters in 22 and 4 other times that year, 24 and today is all about Marco Simone. He came back from Italy so disappointed with his play that he said this a couple weeks ago, that reshaped his thinking, his preparation, his work to allow 24 and 25 to happen. That all stemmed from Marco Simone.
Wow, okay. Well, you mentioned Bryson DeChambeau. We've seen the American team members and Captain Keegan Bradley leaning into this narrative that Bryson DeChambeau's points are going to be bigger if they're won than any other team member. Or, well, that's what Xander Schauffele basically alluded to, that if Bryson wins a point, it's more important than the point that I win, because Bryson leans into the crowd participation and will look to the crowd and, you know, whip them up. Do you agree with that?
I agree that he can be a spark, which is what also Xander had mentioned about a month ago. I don't buy into the fact that, you know, what Monte used to say about Tiger, you know, it felt like winning 2 points. And I think you could apply that to Scottie, not as easily, but you can. Bryson, I just don't buy. I think Bryson's a showman. I think Bryson embraces the entertainment aspect of golf and the Ryder Cup, and he's kind of embodies kind of what the Ryder Cup's become. That's not a bad thing. He'll definitely engage the crowd, but I don't care who it is. It starts with the golf, and there's a lot of talk about Xander having not played in 5 weeks. Bryson hasn't played in four. The only golf I know that Bryson's played is trying to hit those ping pong balls up into a little tiny glass to give somebody a Ferrari or something. I'm surprised that Poulter didn't sign up, but what kind of shape is he in? What kind of form is he in? I know he's played a limited schedule on LIV and has done well in a lot of the majors, but I'm more concerned about him, or as concerned as I would be about Xander Schauffele.
This is terrible. You're talking down the American team. This is not what we want. We want you to talk them up.
They're going to kill them.
Look, this so-called narrative as well about, you know, the American team not bonding as well as the European team, or maybe it's a case of the European team bonding better than the American team. They're very, very different cultures, even though so many of the European team players play on the PGA Tour. But what do you make of that so-called narrative, which has been going on really since Seve, you know, became that inspirational, emotional, driving force in the European team room back in the 1980s, where egos were parked at the door and Seve sprinkled his stardust inside but made everybody feel like he was their brother. And it seems to have stemmed from that, this so-called European unity. How does it compare to the American camaraderie and bonding?
All right, we'll get to that in a minute. However, this bonding business is the biggest pile of rubbish I've ever heard. There's a difference between unity and bonding. These Americans, these guys get on famously. Fast friends off the golf course, some of them vacation together. There is great bonding going on. In fact, I used to think the greatest part about European bonding, let's make it unity, is the fact they didn't like each other. I mean, it's true. You think Darren Clark was best buddies with Monty or Thomas Bjorn? Absolutely not. But they knew to get all the points they needed out of Monty, they need him to make him feel like the greatest guy on earth, and they did that. I don't think Sergio and Jose Maria Olazabal were terribly close, because Sergio and Seve were never tight, and I think there was some spillover. But that week, they partnered, and they did well. So there's some discontent amongst European players over the years. But they need, as you say, parking the egos at the door. They needed to make sure that they were all one, all headed in the right direction. That's, to me, what they always did so brilliantly. I can't think of too many Americans or too many American teams where the boys didn't really genuinely enjoy the company, like each other, and so and so. But to the point of it all was something Paul Azinger said to me a couple years ago, and it's so true, and it's to me the heart of this Ryder Cup. He said about the Americans, it's in their head, but for Europe, he said it's in their blood. And that's the difference. The Americans want desperately to win the Ryder Cup. Some of them have been, like Justin Thomas's, is one that's in his blood. And I think Scotty, it's a lot in his blood. I'm not sure to what degree yet. But most of them want desperately to make the team. They want desperately to win. And then they go on with their lives. Europe wants desperately to win that week for them, for themselves, for the unity. And they still think about it for the next 2 years until the next one. It is everything to them. I would think a lot of Europeans are more intent about what their Ryder Cup record is. And I'm talking about winning and losing teams, not so much personal record, as anything else they do in golf. And I don't think it's ever been that way toward a very individualistic thinking American way.
Okay, short question. Keegan Bradley versus Luke Donald, the respective captains. How important is that in terms of determining the outcome of the match?
That's a short question and a hard one to answer, and I kind of wish you'd go on to the next one. But Luke was brilliant last time, and he was very much, reminded me a lot of Bernhard. Very much a quiet person, but so methodical and attention to detail. He was brilliant that way. It's a tough ask coming in to do a very similar team when you can't help but think of 2 years ago, when this is a new place and a new start, new attitudes, new everything. That's going to be tough for Luke, and that's his challenge. Keegan, I think, has pushed every button the right way. Keegan's got a lot of passion for the Ryder Cup. He's only played in two of them. He hasn't been a part of any of them in 11 years. This is kind of homish for him in terms of going to college and having a history here. And I think he's done really well at putting the team in front of himself. And I thought it was brilliant when he left himself off the team but kept everybody else guessing, including me, by the way. I mean, we were all at Eastlake on Sunday thinking, wow, is he going to play or is he not? I'm not sure. What do you think? Back and forth. And it turns out Keegan knew all along, but he shows up Wednesday to announce the captain's picks, and said I decided a while ago. But what he showed to his team was, it's about us winning the cup with you. Leave me out of it. Like, I'm going to be selfless here and step aside. He knew all along he wasn't playing. But the message he gave to his team was, this is all about you and it's all about winning. What I've heard from the Americans over the last 3 or 4 months is that Keegan really doesn't care about anything but one thing, and that's winning the cup. And so I think they have felt that. Now, we could talk details and clothing and pairings and everything else, but the message he's been giving them is, win this cup at any cost.
Rory McIlroy, I have to bring you around to Rory at some point, so I'm going to do it right now, and for a reason. Rory has said that one of the big achievements in golf is winning a Ryder Cup away from home, which was done in Medina in Chicago in 2012 in the most extraordinary comeback circumstances. It's not called a miracle in Medina for no reason. Is he right?
You know, he's got history on his side, doesn't he? And yeah, you look at Europe having not done this since Medina, and only 4 times since Europe became, you know, part of the mix. It's more a case of the Americans not having done it since 1993. And there must be a reason for it. But frankly, the biggest reason for it was the Americans never gave themselves a chance in the early 2000s. Their point structure for making the team gave us Von Taylor and Brett Wetterich in 2006. It gave us Chris Riley and Fred Funk in 2004. Only when Paul Azinger modernized and took stock of what was happening in worldwide golf and adjusted it to get the proper team up, has it been kind of a home and away, home and away. And Rory would be the first to tell you that Medina was a fluke, and it was. I mean, it was a matter of Justin Rose making a 45-foot putt and everything going right, and so be it, and fair play and all that good stuff. But is it hard? I'm not sure. I mean, I would have fancied the Americans' chances in Italy. If they could do it all over again, why didn't they win? Maybe because they didn't play golf for 5 weeks, possibly. I'm not sure they had the greatest captain. I would definitely say they didn't have the greatest captain and the right picks. But if they had carried forward from Whistling Straits, different players, but the same kind of attitude and leadership, that might have been different. So I'm not answering your question for about the 100th time today, but it is a huge achievement, the biggest. No, I think we need more time on this one.
It's funny, actually, there is a statistic. You mentioned 93 and America's last victory on European soil. Since then, there have been 7 Ryder Cups on American soil, and Europe have won 3 of them. So I'm going to ask you the question, is it going to be a home victory?
Another one I'm not answering. How many does that make? I think it will. Just a hunch. I have no idea. I never know who's going to win coming into these things because they all look so good. There's a lot of unknowns on the American side. J.J. Spahn. Who never admitted the other day that he never even dreamed of being in the Ryder Cup, much less a year ago. He's played lovely golf this year, and I expect him to play well this year. Sometimes when you get kind of one-off major winners, they do well the rest of the year. Russell Henley, to me, had a good President's Cup last time, big deal. He's a nice putter and a nice player. Ben Griffin, we don't know much about. I mean, there's still some unknowns on the American side, but it's still got great strength from Cantlay, from Scheffler, from Justin, Bryson, you would expect. Europe has got a team, you know, the same 12 faces, as I like to say, that it's already proved how good they can be last year. I think it'll be really close, like you want. Just a hunch, the Americans might win this one.
I have a feeling that the experience of Whistling Straits, which was so chastening for Europe, I think is part of the driving force and them feeling that this victory on away soil is extremely important. I think it will be a case of it being a close one, because I do think the Ryder Cup needs a close one. It doesn't need it for the event to be big and, you know, this extraordinary transcending golf event as it is, but I think we'd all like to see a 14.5, 13.5 and a bit of heartache come Sunday evening. Doug Ferguson, Associated Press golf correspondent, thanks so much for joining us in Game On.
Always a pleasure, Greg.